Ernest, what's up? Look, you know how every new year we set these big goals, like saving more money, but somehow life just gets in the way? I mean, how many times have I told myself I'll stick to a budget only to see random delivery fees and subscription services eating away at my wallet? It's like the world is designed to spend our money. That's why I love Acorns. It makes saving and investing automatic so you can stick to your financial goals without even thinking about it. This episode of Earn Your Leisure is sponsored by Acorns. You've probably heard me talk about Acorns before, and I'm excited to share more about how it can help you too. Acorns makes it easy to start automatically saving and investing so your money has a chance to grow for you, your kids, and your retirement. Here's the best part. You don't need to be an expert. Acorns will recommend a diversified portfolio that fits you and your money goals. You don't need to be rich. Acorns lets you invest with the same spare money you've got right now. You can start with $5 or even just your spare change. You don't need a ton of time. You can create your own Acorns account and start investing in just 5 minutes. Basically, Acorns does the hard part so you can give your money a chance to grow. For me, Acorns has been a game changer. I remember looking at my bank statements and realizing I wasn't making any progress toward my long-term financial goals. With Acorns, it was like flipping a switch. Now, every little bit of spare change I spend is automatically invested. Over time, those small steps have really added up. And it feels good knowing I'm working toward a better future without stressing about it every day. So head to acorns.com/EYL or download the Acorns app to start saving and investing for your future today. Paid client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Tier 2 compensations provided. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors, LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/EYL. Earners, what's up? You know what's crazy? I recently discovered that I was paying for a subscription that I hadn't used in over a year. I signed up for it, completely forgot about it, and it kept charging me every single month. Thanks to Rocket Money, I not only caught that subscription, but canceled it in just a few clicks. Rocket Money has been a game changer. It saved me time, money, and stress. If you're ready to take control of your finances, give Rocket Money a try. You won't regret it. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that helps find and cancel your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower bills so you can grow your savings. With Rocket Money, you can see all your subscriptions in one place and know exactly where your money is going. For ones you don't want anymore, Rocket Money can help you cancel them. Their dashboard gives you a clear view of your expenses across all your accounts, so you can easily create a personalized budget, track spending trends, and get alerts for unusual activity or bill increases. And here's the best part. Rocket Money will even try to negotiate lower bills for you. They'll handle customer service and get you the savings you deserve. How easy is that? So cancel your unwanted subscriptions and reach your financial goals faster with Rocket Money. Go to rocketmoney.com/EYL today. That's rocketmoney.com/EYL. rocketmoney.com/EYL. Don't wait. Don't hesitate. Head over there now.
Earners, what's going on? Listen, EYLU is relaunching, revamping, retooling. That's right. We're creating a new educational experience that's more expansive. Shotty, tell them what we got.
Yes, 2023. We got a lot in store, a lot planned for you guys.
So you know that EYLU already includes monthly financial planning calls with me, book club calls with Troy, real estate calls with MG the Mortgage Guy, access to the home buying blueprint, volume 1 and volume 2. Part of the revamp will include 27 local chapters from across the United States, live interactive teaching, hands-on, not just pre-recorded videos, plus 15 brand new curriculums.
The biggest just got bigger.
Head over to EYLUniversity.com. That's EYLUniversity.com. See you there.
All right, guys, welcome back. EYL.
Yes,
we,
yes.
We are in the studio back off of InvestFest with one of the highlights of InvestFest.
That's a fact.
If you didn't catch his interview with Big Facts, then you definitely missed a great one. Hopefully they might put that out. I don't know. But Lecrae, I mean, you know, we look at the music industry, somebody that's changed the game as far as the content is important. We'll talk about the categorization of the content, but in a time where, you know, people have complained about a lot of negative influences in music and how it influences people, especially young people, I think that it's positive to have a balance. So he's been able to do it. And also an entrepreneur running a record label, we just talked about it, 27 awards.
And counting.
From Grammys to Billboards. Little
of those people say amen.
To everything, and just been, you know, a very interesting story. So thank you for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm excited to be here, boy.
Appreciate it.
We saw each other in passing at the Fest. Yep, I was like, my brother, I appreciate you so much.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I had a blast. Thank you. It was a phenomenal time, man.
Thank you.
Phenomenal.
So for the people that may have heard about you but not totally familiar with your story.
Yep.
So, all right. I want to make sure I say this correctly.
Yeah.
You are a hip-hop artist first and foremost, but your content usually leans towards Christian rap, right?
Yeah. There's so many ways to spin that. This is what I always try to tell people. I am authentically Christian, but I am authentically hip-hop. I'm kind of like if Outkast and the Books of Moses had came together. You know what I'm saying? So so it's kind of like sometimes it's a category for people, but that's the essence of hip-hop for a lot of folks. It's always been this outlier that people didn't quite understand, and then it was like, okay, hip-hop is now mainstream, but then it was like, Southern rappers, what is that? And then it's like, now you got Outkast and it's mainstream. Now the South is like on the forefront of it. And I look at it the same way, you know what I'm saying? It's like Wu-Tang was spitting 5% gems. And it's like, okay, that's the perspective they're coming from. This is the perspective I'm coming from. But at the end of the day, it's hip hop. You know what I mean? So,
yeah, no, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Honestly, I never really thought about it like that. But yeah. I never heard like Rakim be classified as a 5% rapper.
Exactly.
It's hip-hop music. It just has a faith base.
That's right.
Which that's anything that you do is going to influence your life that you're living.
Exactly.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like that's just common sense. That's like you're gonna rap about the things that you do on a daily basis. So all right, so how did this come about for you as far as you're from Houston originally, then you moved to the West Coast. I'm assuming you grew up in a church.
I didn't.
That's the crazy part.
Yeah. So my mom grew up in church, and she had a really negative experience. So it's like very legalistic.
With the church?
The church, yeah. Okay. So she had this real kind of rigorous, like, she couldn't wear pants, makeup.
Okay.
And this was in Houston, Third Ward Houston, so it was really tough on her. And at the same time, she's also, the Black Panthers is feeding her free breakfast and teaching her these lessons. So she getting both of these worlds, and she like, wait a minute. So she like, I don't want my kid to have religion forced on him. So she raised me to be a free thinker. So as a kid, I'm reading Eldridge Cleaver. I'm reading autobiography of Malcolm X. I'm reading W.B. Du Bois. She like, nah, we not doing this religious stuff. You know, she was a hippie. You know, she got her little weed room and all of that. You know what I'm saying? So that was kind of the world. And she let me explore. And so hip hop raised me. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So that's just, you know, and it wasn't until I was a young adult going to a college Bible study that, you know, I had a full ride to the University of North Texas. A girl invited me to a Bible study. I went, never heard any of this stuff before. And that's when the transition started to happen. And I always rapped, but now I had a different lens. So I didn't know gospel music, nothing. The first gospel album I ever listened to, as far as I'm concerned, was The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill. So that's what I thought you do when you meet God. I thought you rap like that. Yeah. So that's what I started trying to do.
So this is late 90s.
Yep.
Right? Because I feel like we're from the same generation.
99, 2000, yep.
So you didn't grow up listening to gospel music. Mm-mm. But the hip-hop era of that time.
Yeah.
So Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, that's interesting. I've never thought of it in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
Who else at this time is influencing you? Because I know you're big on Jay for a few reasons, Outkast. Who, like, what was it about the lyrics that said, you know what, I love what they're doing? Because at this time, people are talking about the negative impact that hip-hop has had. Gangsta music has just been introduced in the early 90s. Yeah. Now we're getting the bling era going.
Yeah.
How do you say, all right, I like this, I'm listening to it, it's influencing me. Let me do something
different.
Flip
the script.
Yeah.
So Tupac was probably my dad. You know what I'm saying? Like, so he was so transparent and vulnerable that vulnerability I wanted to communicate in my music. You know what I'm saying? Like, just the pain. He had a song called Papa Song where he talked about his relationship with his dad. My dad ran out on a family. You know, he was doing his dirt, had his run-ins with the law. He was, running with the Crips in Compton. And I never saw him after I was 4 years old. He was gone.
Ever in life?
Nah. I just saw him again for the first time in 2020. And we sat down and had a discussion for the first time. I filmed it and everything. Oh, wow. So out in Cali. So hip hop was like my dad. These were the men who were raising me. I'm listening to these stories and I was like, I want to impact people the way Pac is impacting me. After I met God and had my spiritual transformation, it was like, I'm still like this to this day, but it was like Righteous and Ratchet. So it was like, I still listen to the hood, the ratchet stuff. But I was trying to like, yo, I'm changing. I need to listen to Common now. I need to listen to Talib. I need to listen to Mos. I need to listen to Slum Village. Like, I need some positive, like, different type of focus in my music. And so that's kind of, you know, how I developed some of my craftsmanship. But even just talking about things that matter to me without feeling like I'm just trying to punch people in the face with it, but just like it's just who I am.
It's crazy that you reference those albums, because at the same time I'm listening to those albums. So like,
yeah,
Common puts out B,
yeah,
but you being obviously Houston having some roots,
yeah.
I wonder
yeah.
how much Scarface played it, because at this time The Fix is coming out, yep. And that whole album, classic album,
yeah.
He's talking about faith. He's yep. talking about God.
Man, my drummer to this day says Scarface is his gospel music. Okay. He from Houston as well.
Okay.
So Houston. So the funny thing is, Houston, the rap scene. When you from something and you around something, it doesn't have the same kind of influence on you as people would think. So it was like the rap scene was everywhere, but hip hop to me was so global. I wanted to know what was happening with the West Coast, the East Coast. You know, I wanted to know all about that, because Houston, I could walk out the house and that's right there. What Houston taught me more than anything, and to this day, Chamillionaire is still one of my dudes. What it taught me more than anything is the hustle. Is the entrepreneurship, because everybody was selling their music out the trunk.
Mm-hmm.
It's why I have an independent label to this day, is because that's what I saw. You know, I went to school in Texas. My partners was from Houston, and you just saw how it worked. You saw entrepreneurship. So even with my first CD, I went to the major label. They said, it's too Christian. Take it to the gospel label. I went to the gospel label. They said, it's too edgy. Take it to the mainstream label. So I said, oh, neither one of them want me. Let me create my own lane. Because that's what Houston had to do. So it was like, all right, we coming out the trunk with it. You know what I mean? And I have, it's a crazy story how it popped off for me was I made the CD. I'm on my campus. I got a group of folks who rocking with me. I take it to the store trying to sell a box of CDs on consignment. They say, we'll take one. I give them one. And then they say, yeah, if somebody buys it, then we'll, you know, maybe we'll buy some more. I give them one. I send four people up there. They go buy that one. They say, all right, we'll take five. I give them five. Within 2 hours, all five are gone. They don't realize I got 400 people.
You're sending people.
I got 400 people ready to come.
Where's the 400 people from?
From my campus.
Just people that you know.
Yeah. From my campus who rocking with me and supporting me, because I was putting in the work on the yard, on the campus, you know what I'm saying? And
what school you at?
I'm at North Texas, University of North Texas.
Gotcha. You play sports?
I tried to walk on a basketball team, but it was too much. It was too much of a grind. You know
what
I'm saying?
So what scholarship? You said you got scholarship.
I got a full scholarship in performing arts. Performing arts.
Makes
yeah.
sense.
So, yeah.
Okay. So, as far as the independent side of it, right? What's the steps that you took to actually have a label? Because it's one thing to press up CDs and sell them.
Right.
Right. That's a hustle.
Yeah.
But if you have a label, that's a business.
Right.
So, how do you just start a label?
So, obviously, you need seed. Capital to really begin to do the work. My partner Ben, you know, he had another friend of ours, a friend of his, who was like, I got like $5,000 from my pops that we can invest into this. So with that $5,000, it was like, that's the lawyer drawing up, getting the trademark, the LLC, all of those particular things.
The logo,
all of that, building it out. What we already had was a market base. So we already had a fan base. We had a market. We had good music, because no one had ever heard anything like this before, because I was blending the traditional sounds of hip hop with my faith. And it was like, what is this? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So we knew we had something. We had a focus group with the campus. You know what I'm saying? So the test market, the issue now was creating a business. Mm-hmm. And so after the business was created, you know, we still didn't really understand. No one went to business school, so we still didn't understand how it works. So I'm reading books. You know, the information is free. I'm reading Russell Simmons' books. I'm reading everybody's books trying to understand what this looks like. And from there, it was like, oh, we got to put the UPC. We were selling CDs without the UPC code. It is just like...
What's the UPC code?
On the back of the CD, just, you know, the barcode.
Track, so people, track the scan.
So people like sound scan.
Exactly. You're just learning that. And you just learn pieces of the game. I highly recommend, like, if you got to do it yourself, you'll learn the whole game. A lot of times artists will give their artistry to someone else and say, you figure it out. But you don't learn the game that way. So for us, it was doing it everything. I mean, literally, I'm mailing every CD. I'm mailing CDs to Australia and paying the fees on it and learning like, oh, I got to figure out a different way to do this. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it was just a step-by-step process. It was a slow burn, but it was, you know, slow grind, but a for sure grind.
And that was what year?
That was 2003, 2004.
Yes. That's before iTunes.
Yes.
Yeah. So iTunes
what's,
later.
What's the trans you from the physical CDs to actually
iTunes
DSP? Yeah.
So that was the dope part is we're young, so our audience is young, you know, because generally your audience is like 5 to 10 years younger than you, right? So our audience is young, so transitioning to digital wasn't a hard thing because we had a young audience. Older audiences tend to struggle with like change, so for us it was like what social media is today. Back then was YouTube. So we just was on YouTube. We making content. Here go an EPK. Here go the story of how this song was made. And our audience is eating it up. And then we saying, go to iTunes and go get this. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And that's how mainstream started to pay attention because we didn't categorize ourselves in a Christian category. We put ourselves in a hip hop category.
Yeah.
So our fan base was a groundswell. And then it just jumped up, and all of a sudden, people were like, "Yo, who? What is a Lecrae? Why is Lecrae beating Nicki Minaj?" Yeah. I had the barbs coming at me crazy.
What'd you beat her at?
On the charts, on the iTunes charts.
Oh,
yeah, yeah.
I heard your name before I ever knew who you were.
Yeah,
because I just kept saying I go to church, so I was going to church every Sunday, and I kept hearing it. I got a few questions though, because it's interesting. You said mainstream, and I'm thinking to myself, people that go to church.
Uh huh.
The population is getting older and older and older. I don't see as many young people going. Yeah. So that's interesting. So how are you being received by church going the traditional gospel art, the Fred Hammonds, the Hezekiah Walkers, who they're looking at like, that's the music we listen to when we go into church.
Yeah.
Whereas your approach is like, that's what I'm gonna listen to.
Right.
This almost feels like this is secular music.
That's exactly what it was.
How was that reception early on?
But see, it was like NWA. It was like, it's like the more you say we are wrong, the more the young folks want it. Mm. You know, so we was getting, they hated us. They was like, this is the devil, rap and God don't go together. And look at they clothes and the tattoos and, you know,
who was saying that?
The older pastors and churches, you know what I'm saying? So even one dude made a series about us and how people should not be listening to our music and steamrolling it. And but that was fuel because it just made younger folks say, oh, I gotta check this out. What is this? You know what I'm saying?
Exactly what happened.
And that's what ended up happening for us. But we faced a lot of backlash. Oftentimes what would happen, it would be like a youth pastor or somebody like that who was like, yo, my kids rock with it. We gonna bring you out to do something. Or it would be like some hood outreach, you know, where it wasn't connected to a church. It would just be like somebody who is like just trying to impact the neighborhood and they would bring us out. And then that's how it was spreading. But also there was a sports camp in Branson, Missouri, called Kids Across America. And this camp was for like inner city youth. And they was kids off the block, but they come into this camp to get this new experience, and our music is pumping through the speakers. So these kids is like, yo, what is this? This is crazy. And they're loving it. So of course their leaders and, you know, guidance counselors are like, I gotta get this music back to them because it's connecting with them. And it just was like a tumbleweed effect, man. Yeah. It just kept building.
So that's exactly how I got introduced.
Yeah.
My pastor, he came from music. So he had a music background.
Okay.
He's a little bit younger. He's from Queens.
Yeah.
So he's into hip hop.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's the first time I heard it when I was in church. The other part of that question is a lot of times in hip hop, you know, people are rapping about the environments that they're in.
Yeah.
And so as you being faith-based, I wonder what the environment around you was like. Because, like, I grew up in, like, as an adult, I was going to church, but none of my friends were going.
Yeah.
And it was like, yeah, I can't do nothing on Sunday. Sunday, I got to go to church.
Yeah.
So how much did that, was there pressure, or was it like, did people start conforming around you to saying, look, he's doing something, we should probably join him, or were people kind of like reluctant to be a part of this?
So this was the crazy part. Because the black community oftentimes, you know, the white community's been around a monopoly board more times than we have, right? So because we don't get as many chances around a monopoly board, we're not as apt to change. We're a little tighter on things. We're like, wait a minute, I don't know, because I'm first generation money. I can't be giving it away, or, you know, things along those lines. So the white Christian community was like the first to really give me a chance to let me rock. Mm-hmm. You know, the black community was like, I don't know, this don't feel right. White Christian community was like, dude, yeah, let's do something different, bro. Like, yeah, get a rapper. They had already done the Christian rock thing. So they bringing me out to these rock festivals, and they got, it's 60,000 people out there. You know what I'm saying? Billy Graham speaking and all this type of stuff. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, I'm out there, and I'm like, the first encounter they've ever had with something like this. And they've been around a monopoly board a few more times. They got the extra money to invest in it. They'll take a risk, a chance. So they was giving me a chance to rock. And I did the same thing that Jay did with Linkin Park, or the same thing that Run DMC did with Aerosmith. And I started blending in some of their sounds with my song, and I would make a remix just for that event. And then it was like gangbusters. So now I had this community rocking with me tough, and little by little the black community was like, oh, okay, we okay, if it works then we'll take it, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it's understandable, because you know, we're a little more like, wait a minute, reserved with what we got.
So okay, as far as like being an independent artist, we've seen a lot of independent artists like Russ, even LaRussell, shout out to him, where they've been able to make money. Especially like Russ, like he's been able to make a lot of money, but I've never heard a Russ song
played,
never,
like on a radio or
ever,
something like that.
Ever, yeah, in life, yeah. Right? But he's been able to cultivate a cult following, do shows, sell merch, whatever, right? So a lot of people don't understand that. They're like, how can you be a successful artist if I've never seen this person, right? So you as independent artist, right, that has had a lot of success, what's your blueprint as far as, you know, maintaining your following, you know, making revenue while facing the challenges of not being like a quote-unquote mainstream artist?
I think, you know, they say niches get riches. So, you know, are you taking care of your niche? You taking care of your space? I never believed that I was in any other business other than the people business. You're always in the people business. If you take care of people, they'll take care of you. So if you just look at this as a transactional situation, if you don't look at it as, how can I benefit the person on the other side, the consumer, from this B2C, how do I take care of them? Because then they're going to take care of me. So, man, we super serve our fans. You know what I'm saying? Like, every T-shirt, we just look something small. Throw some Jolly Ranchers in a package when you send it to them. They're like, yo, they sent me some candy. It's just, it's small, but it's like they feel considered. You know, doing Q&As, I was meet and greets with everybody when I first got started, you know, just to like super serve the people that was coming to support me. And you got to realize, if you're experiencing something, there's other people who are having a similar experience. So there's all, you're not alone. So how do you connect with the people who are dealing with or wrestling with or experiencing the stuff you're experiencing? And that was how, you know, we did it. And that was the crazy, like, just like what you're saying with, like, with Russ and everything. I had the number one album in the country, beat Maroon 5, and everyone's like, how? Who is this? Who's this person? I don't know a single song. I didn't have no record on the radio. So everyone's scratching their head, like, why? It's because, man, I'm super serving my niche. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, I'm at everywhere they are, I'm there. I'm doing the shows. I'm doing the meet and greets. I'm connecting with them. I'm sending out the packages. I'm having conversations. And I think a lot of times artists don't want to put in that work and do that hand-to-hand transaction to understand the market. That's another thing. I come from, so when I first got out of school, I couldn't find a job. So I went to the cable guy. I was a cable guy. You know, I'm in attics fighting off rats, you know what I'm saying, installing cable. And I hated it so much that one day the vice president came to, like, give us a little motivational speech, like, hey, you know, vice president of the cable company, you guys are our superstars. And I went up to her and I was like, yo, you know, I got a background in marketing. You know, I went to school. Is there any way, you know, because my days off are Thursdays and Tuesdays and Thursdays, is there any way I can come and intern for free? You know, whatever y'all need me to do. And she was like, oh, okay. So I went up into that building and I just was soaking up game, just soaking up game, soaking up to the point where they was like, oh, you, we got to hire you. You're not a cable guy no more. So now I'm working in the marketing department at the cable company, you know, and soaking up more game, soaking up more game. So everything I'm soaking up, focus groups, test markets, how to talk to people, you know, running a board meeting. This is all game I'm soaking up. So by the time I start my own company, I have a prototype from a very successful cable company on certain little things. And I think it's just access to that information helps you to understand how to connect to a marketplace. I would read
What's some of those things that you learned?
So one of the things which we do now is, you know, do you have proof of concept, right? So a lot of times, especially artists will say, yo, my music's dope. Listen to music. How do you know it's dope? You got proof of concept? Like, you made it. Your product, whatever you created, do you have proof of concept that is that it, people want this, that it works? So, you know, proof of concept is we tested it and we got a good result. So what they tasked me with, they couldn't figure out why Hispanic people weren't watching this network. And it was like, they're not buying our package for, you know, the Latin community's not buying it. So I'm in Texas and I said, well, let me do a focus group. You know, because I've seen them do focus groups for other things. So I just say, yeah, let me get a bunch of the Latin community out here. Let me ask them some questions. And I'm like, why don't y'all watch this? And they was like, it's Cuban, it's Puerto Rican, we're Mexican. Mm. And it was like, oh, y'all speaking to the wrong people. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, we speak Spanish.
And so, you know what I'm
we're
saying?
Not from the same place.
So it was like, all right, no proof of concept. That's why this package ain't working. Redo it. They redid it. And made more networking for the Mexican American community. Bam, took off like gangbusters. So same concept for me now is I take my artist Limo Blaze. He's an Afrobeat artist. A producer made this remix of a very popular song. It went viral on his IG. I said they like this remix of this song. That's the sound. That's proof of concept that this sound base works. You need to rap over this. He raps over it. Jumps up to top 40 Afrobeat charts. You know what I'm saying? And it was just like, we already saw it worked. The market already said it worked. So do that. And that's one of the things I learned.
Have you ever done a focus group?
Yeah.
For music?
Yeah, we do focus groups all the time.
You do?
So
this is reach.
Random people?
Yeah. No, so we'll do a test market. We'll have like fans. See, that's another way to super serve them as well. Because now they're getting exclusive.
Let them hear first.
Exactly. So we'll get a group of fans. We'll say, yo, here's 6 songs. Rank them. You know what I mean? Like, and they'll be like, this one is this one's that, this one's this. And you got 2,000 fans and they like, these are my top 5s and this is why and this is why. So now you got feedback. You got proof of concept. Yeah, you in the office thought this was the joint. That ain't it.
Yeah. I'm going to stay there for a sec, right? Because it sounds like you're big on analytics.
Oh, for sure.
Like, I can just hear it, the way you're talking. So what happens when you do the focus group, right? Because sometimes it works, but sometimes you'll hear, and like you said, this ain't working. What are the lessons that you're learning from that when it's like, all right, yeah, this one didn't chart. What are we learning from this?
Yeah. So one of the things you got to learn, one of the things I've learned is that the market's always changing. And and even like the audiences are always changing. So you can't always bank on it. A case in point was, you know, I had a record with Metro Boomin called Hammer Time. And at that point in time, everything on Rap Caviar that was doing well had Metro's tag at the beginning. You know what I'm saying? So it was like the top 10 songs got, if you're Metro, don't trust you or something, like, you know, you're Metro on the check. So it's like, all right, we're gonna run this song because everything with Metro in it is taking off. We make the record, put it on Rap Caviar. Mm-mm. Didn't work. Because what's starting to happen was ear fatigue. It wasn't the same thing. It didn't work in the same way. It didn't move the needle like it did. The audience had kind of already moved on, but we didn't realize that. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So it's like you got to understand, like, where are people? And that's why I keep younger people around me who are tapped in and attuned to what's going on, because you are looking at things from your vantage point and where you are in life. But meanwhile, the culture is moving a completely different way. So it's always just like, you know, who has their ear to what's going on and where is culture going and how can I be tapped into the culture? That's sociology. That's just understanding where people are. You know, all good marketers are sociologists and understand where culture is.
So you got the Metro Boomin feature.
Yeah.
But I wonder, as you're doing Reach Records and you're obviously creating music, who's the first person from your background of influence and music that is receptive to it, that's accepting to it and saying, like, this is a guy we need to rock with? Who's the first feature that's like, this is now about my life about to change?
For me?
Yeah.
The person that tapped in early?
Yeah.
Don Cannon. Don Cannon, DJ. You know, the Gangsta Grills mixtapes and all that type of stuff was popping. So I would say this, kind of to, it's my guy Street Symphony. So Street and I went to school together. Street went to work for Luda, Disturbing the Peace. He's, you know, doing all this type of work. Street starts, you know, he's like, man, God is showing up my life. I want to transition and do some different things. Craig, let's work together. He already was plugged with Don Cannon. He links me with Don Cannon, and we get the idea, like, yo, we need to do a mixtape. You know what I'm saying? What are we going to call it? Church Clothes. Why we call it Church Clothes? Because everyone expects us to wear suit and tie, but we out here in jeans and tattoos and fitteds, and these are church clothes. You know what I'm saying? So no one was putting, it was the first time anybody put like a Christian rap mixtape on like that piff and all them type of sites, right? So Don Cannon is like, I'm with it. We, you know, I get beats from Ninth Wonder. I get, you know, I had met Kendrick a couple years prior. Me and Kendrick built a dope relationship. Kendrick does a little intro on my video for the song, and it crashes the mixtape website. You know what I'm saying? The downloads were so crazy. One was our fans, two was the intrigue. Cause it's like, is this gonna be dope? What is this gonna be? So it's like people just intrigued, wanting to listen to it. And you know, that for us was like confirmation. It was like, yo, Don Cannon did the mixtape. You hear him in the background. It's the mixtape era too. So it's like you hear him in the background. And people are like, what is this? You Ninth Wonder beats. And it's like, yo, this is crazy. We never heard nothing like this before. And I think that's when people was really like tapped in. And then the second thing I would say was the catalyzer that pushed me over. Again, I'm doing the work on the front end. So a lot of artists don't have what Malcolm Gladwell says, they 10,000 hours. You know what I'm saying? 10,000 hours is going to make you an expert at something. I had my 10,000 hours in. So by the time I got to this moment, this watershed moment, I was ready for it. And that watershed moment was my publicist at the time, Tasha Stout, got me on the BET Cypher for the Hip Hop Awards. They didn't know what category to put me in. So they put me in a foreigners category. So I'm in there with French dudes, Estelle, you know, from London. But I'm ready. You know, I've been groomed for this moment. That's my watershed moment. And they never heard nothing like it. I'm getting hit up, Royce da 5, all these rappers like, what is this? And that was when it was like, we own. You know what I mean?
So as far as, like you mentioned rap caviar.
Yeah.
How important is that for an artist's career to kind of get on those type of playlists? And how do you even get on that?
Yeah, playlisting is, that's another thing. It's like, there's eras. I'm not going to say it's not important, but what I will say is it's not as important as it once was. So it's like radio. Radio was once it. Like, if it's not radio, it's nothing. It's not moving the needle. After radio, it was playlisting. Playlisting was it. If it wasn't playlisted, then it wasn't moving the needle. Now, it's social media. It's TikTok. It's Reels. You know what I mean? If that's moving the needle. And so, if you are not connected, like, I wouldn't even sign an artist who doesn't have a social media following or platform. You know, because if they're not engaged on social media, what they're telling me is they're not willing to do the work. So it's like, nah, you want somebody to do the work for you. I'm not going to do the work for you. You're going to have to work yourself. So now I would say social media. And you got the beautiful thing in where we are now as an industry is the floodgates are wide open. Everyone has equal opportunity access. Make your music. Your test market is social media. They're going to let you know if it's dope. The only downside is that do you have the 10,000 hours to recreate what you did? And a lot of artists don't have that. You know what I'm saying? It's like Fifth just said it on a recent interview that he was going to sign Designer, but Designer only had that one song. And he was like, you don't have another one? I don't have any confidence you can even make another one. And so I tend to look for artists who have, they made it once, they made it twice. There's a consistency. There's a pattern of consistency. So if one of them pops off, I know they can do it again. They didn't put in the manpower and the hours.
How the artists that you're looking for,
yeah,
are they all
faith-based?
Faith-based?
Absolutely.
So they have to be faith-based.
Yeah.
The other part is that it's a challenge, right? Social media is a challenge because, like you said, it's ever-evolving algorithm change.
Yep.
How do you keep it authentic without making it corny, right? When people hear church, they're like, I ain't come here for this.
Yeah.
How do y'all manage to make it something that people want to tune into?
It's categories. So, you know, I would say, you know, you got different iterations and different types of artists. So I got some artists who lean into it heavy. Like, this song is like a worship rap record. You know what I'm saying? And they lean into it. And there's an audience for that. And we want them to do exactly that. I got other artists who they have more of a mainstream presence, you know what I'm saying? And they are more creative, you know, they blend it up. And if you listen, you might not know that's a Christian record. So like my buddy that we signed years ago, Andy Mineo, the song that we had that took off as a number one record was one of the most streamed and it was viral on social media, was Coming In Hot. You know what I mean? Woo, everybody hears the song, right? But Andy's the type of artist that's like, you're not going to know he's this faith-based artist just on first. You got to, like, get into his ecosystem to really kind of know where he's at with it, right? So it's still, it's clean, it's not negative, and it may not have a message right away, but it's something that still resonates with the broader culture. Then I got artists in the middle where they can go over here or they can go over here. Like my artist 1K Few, he's from Atlanta. He got records with Zaytoven, with Honcho, but then he also got records with like a gospel artist. And so he can go in both spaces. And so I let them be the authentic selves, because otherwise it will come off corny.
To the artists, it's like a Honcho, for example, right? When y'all do the record, is it like, yo, this is faith-based, or do you like, yo, be yourself and we'll, do you censor it? How do y'all approach that?
So the crazy part is I think people kind of cater to where they think you are. Sometimes they overdo it. You know what I mean? Like they, in their mind, they got to come in there saying like, hallelujah. You know what I mean? And it's like, yo, chill.
That was a Quavo ad-lib.
It's like, chill. Yo, just fall back. You going too crazy. Just like, you know, like, chill. A lot of times we'll have a conversation and we'll just talk about it, talk it through. But it's rarely an issue. It's mostly we try to create the songs that's neutral territory. So it's like, yo, let's talk about, you got kids? I got kids. Let's talk about being a father, being a present father, how we didn't have that. Let's do a song about that. Like, let's not put you in a lane that's weird for you and it's gonna make it awkward. And I learned that the hard way because I did a record with Big Crit years ago called Mayday. Fire record. But in the record, you know, he's talking about his struggle with faith and wrestling with God and so on and so forth. And it kind of put him, he's talking to this audience that is not expecting to hear this coming from him, right? So this hyper religious people got at him and was mad at him and like, don't talk about this and why would you do this? And you know, kind of was off putting to him. So it's like, I'm not trying to put you in no awkward space either. I want you to talk about what you feel comfortable talking about. And then you got artists like Ty Dolla $ign. I did a record with Ty, and Ty's like, bro, I love gospel music. I was raised on it. I want to do this song. I'm gonna write a verse for it. I said, we just wanted you on the hook. Nah, I got a verse. And for him, he wanted to do that. So it was like, all right, bet.
So what about like booking shows and touring? Because I know that's a major part as far as
You do that independent, or you work with like a Live Nation? How's that work?
Done both. I prefer independent just because when you have a niche audience, nobody knows them like you do. And if you can understand your audience and your market, you can serve them better. So I've done both, but I like it better doing it myself. That's another thing is like I'm big on touring because that's what I was fortunate to see like some of these big crossover rock groups, you know, like, you know, a lot of people don't realize a lot of these big rock groups like Evanescence or Paramore.
Ever wanted to explore the world of online trading but haven't dared try? The futures market is more active now than ever, and Plus 500 Futures is the perfect place to start. Plus 500 gives you access to a wide range of instruments, S&P 500, NASDAQ, Bitcoin, gas, and much more. Explore equity indices, energy, metals, Forex, crypto, and beyond. With a simple and intuitive platform, you can trade from anywhere, right from your phone. Deposit with a minimum of $100 and experience the fast, accessible futures trading you've been waiting for. See a trading opportunity? You will be able to trade it in just two clicks once your account is open. Not sure if you're ready? Not a problem. Plus 500 gives you an unlimited risk-free demo account with charts and analytic tools for you to practice on. With over 20 years of experience, Plus 500 is your gateway to the markets. Visit us.plus500.com to learn more. Trading in futures involves the risk of loss and is not suitable for everyone. Not all applicants will qualify. Plus 500, it's trading with a plus.
You worked hard to lay the foundation for your contracting business. And when you're with Amex Business Platinum, you can keep building it up with a flexible spending limit that adapts with your business. And since you earn 5x membership rewards points on flights and prepaid hotels booked on AmexTravel.com, you get even more from on-site overseeing. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Not all purchases will be approved. Terms apply. Learn more at AmericanExpress.com/AmexBusiness.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets. Guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
They started off on the Christian side. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Creed.
Yeah, they started on the Christian side. And so I was fortunate to see how they move and how they do it because I was over there with them. So it was like, oh, you got a tour. And a lot of our artists don't understand touring. So for mainstream hip hop, well, we take that soft money. We go to the club, right? Yeah, they're going to give you 40 bands, but they're not really coming for you. They trying to go to the club because it's lit and you happen to be there. So it's like, great. As long as your song is popping, you can get a club date. But you're not building a fan base. Our club is the church. So if you're doing these church events all the time, you're not building an audience, right? They come into church anyway. You know what I'm saying?
That's a fact.
They come into the club anyway. So you're not building an audience. You just capitalizing off of what is already there, that built-in audience. And it looks good until you don't have a hit and nobody wants to book you for that event. So what we learned was to build our own audience and our own touring. So we started doing our own tours. And you know, Tech N9ne, another good friend, you know, I sat with Tech N9ne and saw how he built his empire, been in his studio, been in his warehouse, and saw what they did and how they did touring, and just kind of soaked up some game and made sure my artists were touring artists. You got to be a hard ticket artist. That's how you're gonna have longevity. I've been doing this 20 years because I built a fan base. A lot of people don't build hard ticket artists, hard ticket fans. So because of that, you know, they don't know how to do it. And that's what happens in hip hop a lot. So I've had big major artists come to me saying, yo, how you do the tour? What do we need to do? Like, we'll get you on the radio if you can get us touring. Teach us the game. Let's trade secrets. And, you know, it's just something that rock bands been doing. That's why they tour forever.
So what is the secret to that?
The secret is you can't be afraid. You can't be afraid to start small.
Smaller venues.
And that's what we be afraid of. We don't want to look lame. We like, nah, bro. 100 people, nah, bro.
I ain't going out there.
Yeah, I ain't doing that. Yeah. Travis Scott, that's what he did.
Yep. Well, is it financially beneficial to, because when you go on tour, you're going to have to bring a DJ, at the very least. You're going to have to bring a DJ. You're going to have to bring, it's at least five people that probably kind of have to come with you, right?
Yeah.
So if you're doing shows for 100 people, let's say you're charging them 20, 40.
Yeah.
From the artist standpoint, they look at it and probably like, I'm losing money.
Right.
So what's the point of doing it?
Yes. It's two things. One is you're telling a story. So it's branding, right? So part of that is your story building. You're telling a story. So sometimes you're going to have to do that. You're going to have to tell a story that makes people want to come and pay for the next one. So you know, it's the cost benefit analysis. It's like, this is going to cost me this, but what's the benefit? And is the benefit going to outweigh the initial cost? And then two, if you can do enough shows, you can break even or make a little bit of money, right? If you do enough of them, if you do two shows, five shows, you're going to lose money. But if you can, let's say you do 20, it's like, oh, you might break even doing 100 people. But if you do 100 and, you know, you put on a good show, you got to invest in your show. A lot of rappers just get up there with a DJ walking back and forth on the stage. Like, invest in your show, make it something people want to see. And then you just keep building it and building it and building. It's like flipping houses. It's like you got to buy the cheap house first, put a little bread into it. After you put some bread into it, then you flip it. Then you sell it for more. Then you take that bread, you reinvest in another one a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more. And it's the same concept with touring. You know what I mean?
As you're doing this from an entrepreneurial journey, you're learning and growing. But I want it from the spiritual side, right?
Yeah.
Like, that also is an evolving process.
For sure.
How do y'all, and as a leader
yeah.
and the founder of a company and having artists under you, how do y'all tap into that? Are y'all doing retreats or is it like, because I watched my brother go through seminary school.
Wow.
And I was like, bro.
Oh,
like,
he's a
pastor now, studied theology. What is that like for you as a leader of your company?
I think, you know, I take it back to, we was talking about 50 earlier. The reason why we bought into Fifth is because of the authenticity. You really got shot. You was really in the streets. What you rap about, you really live.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is of paramount importance for what I'm doing and what I'm building. Is this your real life? Right? And how do we make sure this is your real life? Like, how are we investing in you so that you are spiritually grounded? So when you do get up there and you talking it, this is not just talk. This is your life. So, you know, part of that includes mentorship. You know, I'm big on that. I'm big on just like, yo, I get in the trenches with my artists and like, let's wrestle through things. Here's some book. I give them book recommendations. You know, we read through books together. We do studies together. We've done retreats. You know, all of those particular things. And I've just been very privileged, man, living in Atlanta and seeing the inner workings of organizations. I see the inner, you know, me and Andrew Cathy, who the son of Dan Cathy, who owns Chick-fil-A, you know, we've sat numerous times. I get to see the inner workings of Chick-fil-A. You know, my homegirl is at Delta. I get to see the inner workings of Delta. And one of the books that I highly recommend that has helped us, and I tell other people, is 4DX. You know what I'm saying? And 4DX is a book that teaches you how to structure your business, how to create, you know, an infrastructure, and teaches you, like, sometimes you're so busy working in the business, you don't work on the business. And so if I'm constantly working in it, I'm not working on it. Yo, what does my staff need? You know, what do my artists need? What's the needs right now? Because if I'm constantly just cracking a whip and I'm not taking inventory of what they need, you know, we'll do reviews and we'll do stop, start, continues. I'll say, well, what do you need to stop doing? Here's what you need to start doing. Here's what you need to continue doing. This is what you're doing well. And so always constant evaluations, always constantly working on ourselves. Like you said, the spiritual retreats, the prayer times, the groups. We do devotionals. You know, I see Chick-fil-A, they do the devotionals. They do all kinds of stuff like that. So we're just incorporating them things.
So, like, the Russell and a couple other artists, and we interviewed somebody that had a platform where a lot of artists now, independent, they're like, having a pay-what-you-want strategy?
Yeah.
Is that something that you
Nah, we don't do that.
You would never do that?
I'm not. I understand it. I do think I get that. I think at the stage that like LaRussell's at, he's in a disruptive stage, which that's dope. And I salute him for that. You know, I want to work with him. You know, we've talked about doing some stuff. I'm not in the disruptive stage in this state of my career. So at this stage of my career, you know, I got, you know, an office full of employees and multiple artists. Like, I have to think about maximization. You know, I'm not like the lean startup. You know, I'm not at that stage. If you're in the lean startup stage, obviously, do some disruptive things. You know what I mean? Because you lean and you can move lean. I got 401ks. I got. We can't play no games. So for us, it's like we have to think a little bit bigger. Now maybe there's one artist that we can do that experiment on, but as a whole, we can't be that disruptive. We have to move in the flow of business in some senses. You know what I'm saying? Like, where is the business culture going? And you go with the flow. If you're a disruptor, you're going against the flow of where business is to create something different. And I've been there, and it's effective. But this is what I always tell people. It's like, when you start off your business or your company, you playing golf, right? And when you playing golf, everybody uses the same tool. Everybody gets to hit the ball. Everybody puts it in a hole. It's all hands on deck. You can be a disruptor playing golf. It's fine. You get a little bigger as basketball, right? Everybody touches the ball. Everybody shoots. Some shoot more than others. Some pass more than others. But we got different roles. But when you get big enough, which is like, you know, it gets very intense. You got multiple employees. You playing football. And when you playing football, everybody can't be the kicker. Everybody can't be the quarterback. Yeah, your homeboys, that's your man. You grew up with him. Y'all was playing golf. It was all good. He can't catch. You got to have a specialized person who knows how to do that role. And that's when, you know, it can get sticky and tricky. But you have to kind of put that hat on and go in the flow of business and say, man, if we're going to do this right, we need the right person for this particular thing. Like, yo, Shorty was dope grinding underground, but we need somebody who's skilled in marketing because the budget is higher. The what's on the line is more crucial.
So let's talk about that, the business culture of hip hop, really.
Yeah.
When you started early 2000s, you said that there was balance.
Yeah.
Right? What people talk about now is that the absence or the lack of balance, right? So for every, I don't know, Lil Durk, mm-hmm. who is the next person, right? There is no Common right now.
Right.
There is, for every Ice Spice, who is the Lauryn Hill?
Yeah.
How difficult is it to now crack through in a space where there's no balance?
It's a good thing and a bad thing to me. I think it's a good thing in the sense that it doesn't exist as much as it did, so people are thirsty for it. So when they get a taste of it, they're like, what is this? This is amazing. So there's room for it. But at the same time, I think as a culture, you know, hip hop as a culture is getting like so frivolous and careless that it could put itself in a very bad situation. So similar to rock and roll, right? Rock and roll just got so crazy, like so off the hinges, it became non-existent. It's like you drugged yourself to death, you prostituted yourself out to death, and now no one is interested, right? It's like there's nothing, there's no texture to it. It's gone. Mm-hmm. And I feel like hip-hop runs the risk of following the same pattern as rock and roll. Like, once upon a time, rock and roll was everything.
Yeah.
Now it's like, who's that? What's rock and roll? So hip-hop runs the risk of being like, yo, you prostituting yourself to death, you drugging yourself to death, eventually there's going to be no substance to hold on to like, even it's just going to be a bunch of chaos. And you turn into what my man Teron calls, like, y'all remember the them little hands that was sticky and you know what I'm saying? You just pick up stuff with it.
Yeah.
You turn into that to where it's like, you just like the blob. You don't have no distinction anymore. It's like, you part of country, you part of pop, you part of you not your own thing anymore. Like, what is hip hop culture in 2024? You know what I'm saying? Like, once upon a time, it was distinct. Now it's like, it's.
What do you think about artists that, you know, so a lot of artists, when they become more spiritual,
yeah,
it's backlash.
Yeah.
Even talking about Lil Durk, right? Now, he's in an interesting space right now. Everybody knows how he started as a drill rapper.
Yeah.
And he's taking a very spiritual turn in his mm-hmm. life. Not mm-hmm. necessarily his music, but in his life.
His life, yeah.
And I'm watching him, and he's trying to walk both sides. He's trying to say, I'm a different person, but I'm still going to make the same music, which is kind of difficult.
Yeah.
And now people are criticizing him, like, well, how are you going to be a devout Muslim and you're talking about killing people, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a weird space.
Mm-hmm.
And like some rappers like Mace, they just left. Like, yeah. He's like, you know, as opposed to try to walk that line, it's yeah. like,
I'm out,
right? Yeah. So what's your thoughts on that? Because it's like, it's one thing if you start how you started.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's another thing if you start very secular.
Yeah.
And then you make a 180 turn and yeah. now people's like disappointed. They saying it's not real.
Mm-hmm.
They overly judging you for everything now because mm-hmm. the expectations are. So that's a very difficult space to be in.
I totally agree. I'm a big fan of taking people with you, right? Like, don't do a hard left on folks. Take them on a journey with you. Because if you bust that hard left, it's like a bait and switch. It's like, I'm different now. And I tell this to a lot of my younger Christian artists. There's a young lady out here. I was just talking with her producer last night. She's like a New York drill artist, right? She meets God. She wants to change. I start listening to her songs. And it's like, I'm killing the devil with my Bible. You know what I mean? And I'm like, slow down. Because all you're really doing is trading in your old ops for the devil. And it's weird to somebody. They like, what is happening right now? This is strange. So I was like, yo, take your people with you. Talk about the story of when you left the club and you was feeling empty. And you was like, I need something different. Like, take us on that journey so we can understand this process that's happening. And we can walk with you down that pathway and say, that's what's up. Like the song Durk and Cole did is like, that's a piece. That's like, that's we on a journey with you.
Gradual. Yeah. Gradual.
Exactly.
We had that conversation. I'm yeah. like, great song. Will they go with him?
That's what I'm saying.
That was like the conversation. Will they go with them?
That's what I'm saying. You can't just.
You can't do it just abruptly. Yeah.
You can't.
So let's talk about somebody who did do it though.
Yeah.
Another guy from Chicago.
All right. Yay.
Jesus Walks.
Yeah.
Jesus is King.
Yeah.
Everything in between yeah. and after.
Yeah.
I went to that show
mm-hmm.
by myself. Thank you.
Well, I don't hold on.
No, because I
think I was abruptly though.
No, no, no. I'm saying saying you taking them with you.
But what he's really saying is he's disappointed you didn't go with him. That's what he's really saying.
Well, you want to know what really happened? Yeah. I bought 4 tickets.
Okay.
I was like, yo, we were at a Complex Con.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like there was a panel that was gonna happen and like the concert was gonna happen.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm gonna call the Uber. I have to see this. Like, yeah. I really want to see this. And the Uber came and I was like in it and I looked at them and they're like, I'm not coming. I'm like, I closed the door. I went by myself. And I almost appreciated that I went by myself.
Yeah.
Because did you see the show?
The Jesus is King?
Yeah.
Nah, I didn't see that one.
It was emotional.
Yeah.
Like because it infused hip hop. It was like the soul to soul, but it was like sold out. Like has like all that together. Okay. And I was like, this is what it should feel like when you come. And then obviously we didn't see anything follow up. So I'm talking about that taking them with you, but you, what happens after?
But yeah. I'll say this about this, because Kanye probably, I'm probably the biggest Kanye fan in the world.
Yeah.
Well, you didn't come to that, Kanye fan, biggest Kanye fan.
Look, it's a few things with this.
Okay.
So, I think Kanye was always on that type of time.
Mm-hmm.
He did Jesus Walks.
That's what I said, Jesus Walks to Jesus King.
Record.
Yeah.
But, so I don't think that's not really, people wasn't really shocked. Okay, this is my thing.
Time, only because that comes right after Life After Pablo.
No, but I'm saying it's not a completely shock. You're not shocked at Kanye. Like, Kanye's not a gangster rapper.
No, he's not a drill rapper.
Like, you know what I'm saying? He always was talking about
something.
Yeah, so it's not a complete
religion
shock.
Was part of it.
Yeah.
My thing with the Kanye thing is that I feel like when he was doing the Sunday services,
yeah,
like, that was dope, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I listened to the album just because I'm a Kanye fan. And the album did
You listen to Jesus King?
Of course. The album did not meet expectations. I'm just being honest with you.
Did you like
now,
it?
Now, Coloring.
I did not.
Like Chance the Rapper. But, Coloring Book, you could say that's like a Christian rap album to me, in my opinion. That's a dope classic. I think that's a classic album, right?
Yeah. There's good records on there.
Coloring Book?
Jesus King. No, Jesus King.
Jesus King.
Water is
good
one of my
production.
One of my favorite
I
records.
Love the production. Yeah. I didn't feel like Kanye was at his best.
He's not.
Yeah.
But that's because are we going to go with him? It was tough.
But was it authentic?
That's the problem. That's what I'm saying.
I don't think it was authentic.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, so like Jesus saying. Walks felt super authentic. It was like, this is different. Yeah. Life After Pablo, I'm like, all right, this is yay.
Yeah.
And then Sunday Service started happening. He had taken a sabbatical and it was like, oh, Sunday Service. He's okay, I get it. And then Jesus King is like, oh, this is what he's on now.
Yeah.
But it really wasn't what he was in the moment he was on that.
Right. That's what I think that's for anybody who first learns something. It's like they want to just, they busting everybody over the head with what they just now learned.
They on fire.
You know what I'm saying? It's like you got to take time to let that sit in and let it soak and let it process. How does that manifest in your day-to-day life? You know what I'm saying? Like when I first had my spiritual transition, I was coming home to my mom like, yo, mom, Jesus. She was like, yo, do you talk about anything else? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And then my pastor at the time was like, stop talking to her about that and live it. I said, what you mean? He said, cut the grass, wash the dishes. Like, just live out the new joy you have and love for her. And I was like, oh. So then I just started serving her, loving her, being a good son. She's like, yo, what the happened to you? You know, what's going on with you? And it was that transition that she got to see versus me just And I feel like that's what I heard on Jesus is King. It was just like, you know, this dogmatic, which we love Kanye for being dogmatic, right? Mm-hmm. But it was like, this don't feel like you done really, you ain't steeped in this yet. It's like you just learning it and throwing it at us. And I would prefer to hear you talk about how your life looks in that time period. You know what I'm saying? Like Eminem, a lot of people don't know, is a Christian. You know what I'm saying? But when he did the joint on Khaled's album, you heard it. But his content just kind of shifts a little bit. You know, he doesn't talk about the same, like, I'm not killing people and stabbing eyeballs and drinking my mom's urine and all kinds of crazy stuff. You know what I'm saying? You could just hear, like, you maturing. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So I'm a fan of that.
Yeah. What are your thoughts about Hov when we talk about growth and journeys?
444 is a grown man's album, bro.
Written testimony as well, no?
Yeah. Yes. You know what I'm saying? Like, we need that as – that's the other thing about hip-hop. Hip-hop don't be letting us grow up. You know what I'm saying? It's like it forever wants to keep us as kids. And I'm like, I think we need a new category or something. We need like
– Well, I think Nas has done a great job.
He has. Phenomenal job.
I think Jay has done a great job with that.
Yeah. Killer Mike.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
He's grown.
So I think – even like a Lil Wayne, like, you know, I don't know if the content of his music has changed, but you see he's changed. Like, he's doing sports shows now and he's with his kids. And it's like, he's still Lil Wayne, but he's not the same Lil Wayne in 2002 than he is in 2024.
The double cups have been put down, I think.
Yeah, hopefully.
Hopefully.
That's what I'm saying. We'll drink ourselves to death out here if we don't.
Which is true.
Yeah.
But it was interesting when you were saying that, I'm thinking about what may have killed rock and roll. Right, and like if you think of you from that era, so like when Kurt Cobain takes his life, that's a pivotal moment.
Yeah,
they lost this was the group, this was the star.
Yeah,
but in hip hop, we're losing those stars like
daily,
every day. We're losing them. The difference in rock and roll is that you're right, they age, and as they age, they're appreciated, they get to tour. Mm-hmm. We're starting to see that now in hip hop a little bit. I know what LL's doing, I know he just put out music, but he's Rock the Bells, and they but. Where's that next generation of people who are going to be able to do that?
It's doing it now.
No, the next generation.
That's doing it now. J. Cole going to be here for a long time. Drake's going to be here for a long time.
But those guys are 39, 40, right?
That's what I'm saying. That's the next generation.
After that.
After
J. Cole, Kendrick, you know?
Yeah, it's going to be tough.
That's the hard part.
That's the Little Dirk because of the world.
And that's the hard part is I don't know when it pertains to them because labels keep signing these jokers right off the block, and their gun is still hot. You know what I'm saying? So it's like there's no development, there's no isolation, there's no time to get away from the chaos. It's like your song is a hit, like Bobby Shmurda. It's like, yo, you hot, and now you're in prison. You know what I'm saying? Chef G, you hot, now you locked up. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's just bang, 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 bang. Pop Smoke, you hot, now you gone. And it's like, man, we need to insulate them a little bit, give them some game. Like, it's something different got to happen because they don't even get a chance to, they frontal lobe ain't even closed. Mm. You know what I'm saying? They're not even getting a chance to mature and to grow in the process.
Well, speaking about that, because, you know, a lot of that has to do with the home structure.
Sure.
And you said earlier in the show, like, you didn't see your dad for 30 years.
Yeah.
So how was that? What was that like, you know, reconnecting with him after a 30-year time frame?
I was fortunate to have been through therapy. So Jay actually got me. Jay.
Jay-Z?
Jay-Z.
Oh, you know Jay?
I met him once. Okay. He didn't get me to go by him telling
oh,
me.
Oh, you listened to the listen
exactly.
to
him. Exactly. And watched
they
him. The, yeah, they you know what I'm saying? Yeah. But David Banner also told me to go to therapy. And so so therapy put me in a place where I was able to meet my dad and say, it's not about what you did, it's about what happened to you.
What happened to him?
Yes. What happened to you to make you this way? Because this ain't just you just being a terrible human being. Something made you like this.
Did you find him or he found you?
I found him. And me and my sister went to go meet him. My sister's, you know, I sit there and I ask him, I say, yo, how you feeling? What's going on? And, you know, he tell me some crazy stories. And then my sister's like, are you proud of him? Are you proud of your son? Like, he's done all these things. Like, do you feel sorry that you wasn't in part of his life?
Has he been following your journey?
He hears about it. You know what I'm saying? So he taps in. And when she asks him, are you sorry about it? He says, I never say sorry. That's the sorriest word in the dictionary. My sister's pissed. I'm like, something made him this way. You know what I'm saying? So I just pry a little more. He starts telling me stories about his pops. And, you know, his pops passed away. He's like, my pops went to Vietnam. He came back. I didn't ask him how you feeling emotionally. And I got out the way. And I was like, okay, this is what's shaping you as a human and why you engaging us in this way. And he was like, you know, God got y'all. I knew God was going to take care of y'all. And it's like, got you. I could be mad at you for this, but something made you this way. And you don't have the mental categories or the mental health to even process this information, right? I do. So for me, it's like, oh, I don't need you to be my mentor in this season of my life. I just need to put my eyes on you, know a little bit more about myself. And maybe we can connect from time to time, but it's not going to be healthy until you get some growth and maturity for you to be a part of our.
So it wasn't like a kumbaya.
No.
He stood firm on why he left.
Yeah. He's like, yeah, man, y'all was going to be straight. You know what I mean?
God got you.
Yeah, God
have
got
you. Have you stayed in touch?
Yeah, we stay in touch. You know, I'll hit him from time to time. He's a very intelligent dude, reads a lot of books, but at the same time, it's like he hasn't done the work on himself.
But how did that affect you growing up, not having a father?
Oh, it's terrible. It was horrible. I didn't even realize how bad it messed me up. You know what I'm saying? Like, it made me insecure. It made me, you know, always run to the affections of a different woman to try to feel something, you know what I mean? And then worst of all, I'm looking for a male figure to be like that leader for me. And the only men who were invested in me were my uncles who were gang members, you know what I mean? So it's like, I'm just out here like, I'm not a man unless I join the gang.
And you never wanted to join the gang?
So yes, I did, but probably, I wonder what y'all, I don't know y'all personal stories, but probably similar to y'all. Y'all probably are growing up around things, but you know internally, like, I'm a little different.
That's not you.
Yeah. I call myself a hangbanger, you know, not a gangbanger. Like, I'm hanging around the bangers, yeah. But I'm like, I ain't.
Affiliated
yeah,
with
yeah, it. Like,
far from hood, but understand the streets.
Man, you know what I mean? I'm like, this ain't really.
Yeah.
So when they start recruiting, that's when it got real for me, when I'm standing on the street corner and some of the OGs are like, hey, The rivals keep coming through here shooting up. This is y'all's gun. Y'all share it. Some pop off. Y'all start shooting back. Now, what we didn't know was week 13, like, this is them trying to, you know, let the people who not going to do prison time do the shooting. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is a little manipulative. But we feeling like, oh, they, like, this is, you know, like,
it's coming of age.
Rite of passage. Yeah. And that moment for me was like, y'all don't see what's happening? Like, I could see it. I could peep it. And I was like, I ain't even mad at these other dudes that much to take their life. And that's when I was like, I just know I got a future. I feel like I got more of a future than this. Yeah. So honestly, for the second half of my life, I felt embarrassed and less of a man because I didn't do the prison time. I didn't, you know, join a set. And I go back to the hood. And they're like, what's up, OG? And I'm like, who they talking to me? And they're like, yeah, you put the hood on the map, bro. You did it, da, da, da. And I'm like, that's crazy because I thought I had to do it that way. And I did it a different way. And man, it's just that's some of the trauma that we deal with as black men too. But yeah.
In that story, as a young man, the story you meet your dad, I hear faith being tested.
For sure.
Over and over again.
For sure.
Talk about the response to that. Because a lot of times we don't know how to handle it when we're being tested. We're not even aware of it till after.
Yeah, for sure.
Talk about that.
Yeah, I think the beauty of my relationship with God and my faith, man, is that I know to whom much is given, much is required. And to whom much is forgiven, much is required. So I know the dirt that I have done. I know the chaos that I've caused, and I know I've been forgiven. So for me to meet my dad, it was like, man, I done been forgiven for so much. You know what I'm saying? And God, if God can forgive me, how can I not forgive this man? Forgiveness doesn't necessarily mean we connected. You know what I'm saying? What it means is I'm not harboring ill will towards you. I don't want nothing negative for you. I'm not holding no bitterness. It doesn't mean we about to hang out in Kumbaya. Mm-hmm. It just means, you know what? I could be mad and carry this bitterness pill, but I want to get better, not bitter. You know what I'm saying? That's not going to help me. So let me love you from afar. You know what I'm saying? And forgive you and move on with my life. And that's, you know, just a part of the journey.
It's another man trying to get to heaven.
You feel me? Like, yeah, man, facts. It's like, yeah, he doing what he can with what he got. And you know what I'm saying? Hopefully, you know what I'm saying, that helps him to see, like, yo, my son didn't even come at me crazy. Like, he came at me caring. I'm not trying to be an enabler either, though. I'm not trying to be like, hey, man, well, you know, let's just get together. Like, because I got cousins who've been in and out of the prison system and on and off drugs. And it's like, I done been through that where I'm like, I'm not putting no more money in your books, bro. Because now I'm enabling you. You know what I'm saying? You're not trying to get better. You know what I'm saying? But if you're trying to do right, get better, I'm with it.
So what's next? What's next as far as the label?
Yeah.
Any big initiatives that you're working on? Like, what's the plans?
Man, just for me, you know, it's legacy. You know, legacy is more than... So inheritance is what you leave to people. Legacy is what you leave in people. So it's like, man, just trying to leave legacy in folks, but also inheritance. I love creating opportunities for other people, man. I want to be my ceiling be someone else's floor. So obviously the label, you know, signing, we got a few new artists we signing. I'm putting out new music. Of course, for me, I still put out music. I still enjoy it. Funny that the next single that I'm dropping is a song that was written, the hook and the production was for Kanye. Because they thought he was on that page, but he switched. So they was like, we ain't got nothing else. Yo, you want these records? I was like, absolutely. So the records are crazy. The next one, you know, is on the way. And then, man, just, you know, the reason why I was excited to connect with y'all is because I'm big into investing. I'm big into, you know, diversifying.
Stocks,
you know, VC. I'm part of Collab Capital, which is a fund in Atlanta. You know, we raise $50 million for black entrepreneurs in the city, black founders. For me, I want artists to know you're like an athlete. You only have a certain window of earning opportunity. So you've got to diversify when you're at the peak of your earning, you know, capacity. And so there was one point in time, I'm still doing great as an artist, but there was one point in time I had a number one album in the country. If I would have just lived like that for the remainder of my career, I wouldn't, you know. So I just learning how to invest, educating folks, that's a big piece of what I'm about now. So I'm always, even, you know, Flex, I'm always telling him, I'm like, you don't work for me, I'm your client. You know what I'm saying? I want all my artists, I want all my employees to see me as a client. You're an entrepreneur. This is your thing. I'm your client. You're building something. You know, use what I have to build whatever it is that you feel like you need to do. And so yeah, more of those types of things, man. That's really where my headspace is.
Dope. Yeah. Well, how can the people stay in touch as far as, you know, website, Instagram, all of that?
Make sure you tap in with me, you know what I'm saying, at Lecrae, L-E-C-R-A-E. Social media, follow me. I'll take you somewhere. You know what I'm saying? Catch me probably at every InvestFest in the future.
Easy. Too easy. Too easy.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, man. So just stay tapped in.
Have you done anything with, like, you talked about like church. Have you done anything like with a collab, like any like the mega churches?
Not necessarily, you know what I'm saying? Like I've done like interactions and certain things like that where we'll partner on a few things. I partner with Experian to do some financial literacy programs. And, you know, obviously we targeted some churches for that. My pastor, he was actually a financial advisor. So he's on Instagram as a stewardship coach. And, you know, we got some talks about doing some stuff because he's a pretty big church in Atlanta as well. And that's why I knew about that Series 7 and the whole nine. Okay.
Smart man.
Yeah. But yeah, man, just, you know, I just want people to be educated, especially our people. And if a portion of our people are in the churches, how do we disseminate that information to them?
You are easily the most well-known faith-based hip-hop artist. Mm. Who do you see out there right now that's like, I like what they're doing, that's signed to you or not signed to you, like, they're the next one coming up?
I mean, I think everybody has different iterations and different, like, aspects of what I do or what I see that I love, you know what I'm saying? So I think, you know, like I said, my guy 1K Fuse, the streets love him. You know what I mean? He's able to connect with the streets and the culture and the church in a way that I feel like I was able to do. You know, my guy Hovey's, the artistic capabilities and blending out all of that together is incredible. But the person that I see like is like, oh, this dude gets it, is my guy KB. And, you know, he was signed to me, but, you know, he gets it so much, he's like, nah, I'm going to do my own thing now. You know, started his own clothing supply company. So he like does fulfillment for other artists, you know, because he learned that game. And he gets it. And I'm like, you get it. You know what I mean?
That's dope.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us, brother.
Absolutely, man. This
appreciate
is great.
Appreciate it, man.
Appreciate Absolutely. You.
Thank Bye. You guys for rocking with us. We'll see you next week.
Peace.
When you're with Amex Business Platinum, you have the card that works just as hard as you do. You give 150% to your business, and so does your card. With 1.5 times membership rewards points on select purchases, you earn rewards that can take your business further. And with complimentary access to more than 1,400 lounges globally, including the Centurion Lounge, you can stay up to speed no matter where your business takes you. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms and points cap apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/AmexBusiness.
Ever wanted to explore the world of online trading but haven't dared try? The futures market is more active now than ever, and Plus 500 Futures is the perfect place to start. Plus 500 gives you access to a wide range of instruments, S&P 500, NASDAQ, Bitcoin, gas, and much more. Explore equity indices, energy, metals, Forex, crypto, and beyond. With a simple and intuitive platform, you can trade from anywhere right from your phone. Deposit with a minimum of $100 and experience the fast, accessible futures trading you've been waiting for. See a trading opportunity? You will be able to trade it in just two clicks once your account is open. Not sure if you're ready? Not a problem. Plus 500 gives you an unlimited risk-free demo account with charts and analytic tools for you to practice on. With over 20 years of experience, Plus 500 is your gateway to the markets. Visit us.plus500.com to learn more. Trading in futures involves the risk of loss and is not suitable for everyone. Not all applicants will qualify. Plus 500, it's trading with a plus.